Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Kaiju Weekly, the weekly podcast where I introduce my co-host to the wide world of giant monster movies. Today, I am your prime last week. I'm the captain of this ship, and my co-captain is...
Look at me. I am the captain now. Jake. I'm Jake.
No, I am the captain now. No, I am the captain. We both fight over who's the captain.
Right. That's probably how this episode is going to go, considering we're kind of jumping into a new format for us with this comic book episode we're doing.
Right. Yep. It's a little bit different format than what we've done so far in our previous three episodes, because we're doing the comic books today, but yeah, we're still gonna sit here, talk about them, have fun with them. You know, I have a lot of fun opinions about the comic books we're gonna talk about today.
Me too. Fun is a certain way to term my opinions about them, but yeah, I definitely should be interesting to get into them. To kind of set up what we're gonna be talking about today, we're actually gonna be talking about one collected story, which is Poe Dameron Volume 1 from Marvel Comics, written by Charles Soule, with art by Phil Noto. And then later on in the episode, we'll talk about a few single issues that came out this month that we're recording in, namely Giants from Dark Horse Comics, and then also Black Panther Long Live the King from, well, it's from Marvel, but it's being produced by Comixology. So yeah, I'm kind of taking the reign on this one, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and we can explain a little bit about, I think we did in our last episode, we explained a little bit about why we're doing the Poe Dameron comic book. It seems kind of odd that we're doing that one in a Kaiju podcast, but, this first volume does have giant monsters in it, and so we kind of wanted to, we're recording really close to when, The Last Jedi came out, so we kind of wanted to do a Star Wars topic just because that's where our minds are at. We're on Star Wars. And how many times have you seen The Last Jedi now? Have you seen it more than once?
Yes, and I'm a little ashamed to admit that I have now seen it 3 times in the theaters.
Oh, well, that's nothing to be ashamed of. I wish I could go see it that many times. right now, I have only seen it once, but I'm planning on going to see it a couple of more times, because I thoroughly enjoyed that movie, so I cannot wait to go see it again.
Right. Yeah, I'm a big fan of it, too. You won't hear any of the kind of crazy outrage on this episode about it. I think we both have kind of discussed it off air, and we're both pretty big fans of it, so a lot of positivity towards it.
Is there any other way we can date this episode so that people a couple of years from now will never be able to hear this episode?
Well, I don't think I think Star Wars, it's timeless. I think the only way we could date this episode is if we... Oh, man. What's a recent event? I don't keep up with the news, so I can't even date this episode myself.
Does this episode take place after North Korea launches its nuclear attack against us, or is it after? That might date the
I can episode. Literally date this episode by saying what the date is.
Yeah. No, I think just saying that we're recording it not far off from when The Last Jedi was released kind of, puts it. But I just wanted to kind of clarify why we're going into a Star Wars comic book, because we've got Star Wars on the mind. I think most people have Star Wars on the mind because of The Last Jedi, and it just so happened that this Star Wars comic had a giant monster in it, so it qualifies to be read and talked about on our podcast.
We basically have one question when considering a piece of media to cover. It's, does this have a giant monster in it? And it's like a yes or no box. It just checked off that yes box for us. So it just flies in, flies right on in. To kind of start our preamble on this comic book, I figured we could start with a segment that you usually do. I have a few fun facts for us to cover today.
Ooh, fun facts.
And by facts, I mean 2 facts that I brought, because I couldn't find any more. But one of them is really fun, so I think that makes up for it.
All right.
For my first fun fact, this comic is written by Charles Soule, who, what's your opinion of Charles Soule?
I generally like most of his work. I haven't read his Daredevil run, So I don't know how he is with like Daredevil or anything, but I do know that the Star Wars books that he's written, I've enjoyed. The Marvel books that that he's written in the past, like She-Hulk and other ones like that, I've really enjoyed. I do enjoy his writing.
Right. I think I'm around the same place for you. I think he's a little more hit or miss for me, but when he hits, he like really hits. And I don't think right. I've ever read anything from him that was just like terrible, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's interesting that you brought up the Star Wars comics he's written, because he's kind of been a mainstay for Marvel as one of their top writers for the Star Wars comics. He's written not only the Lando miniseries, but he also wrote Obi-Wan and Anakin, that miniseries. And he's also currently writing not only this Poe Dameron comic that we're going to cover, but he's also writing the Darth Vader comic that's set between episodes 3 and 4. So they're definitely, right. Marvel's definitely a fan of using him for their comic books. And I think most of the time, most of his stuff is pretty good. Especially that Lando miniseries. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Oh yeah, the Lando comic was really good. And the Darth Vader comic that he's doing right now is actually really good too. I've enjoyed that one.
Yeah, me too. And I think I'm going to bring the Darth Vader comic up a little bit later, because I think something that I noticed in this volume also kind of speaks about his Darth Vader run, but I'll bring that up later. So that's my first fun fact, just that the writer's written a bunch of Star Wars comics. My second fun fact is a little bit more fun. So in this volume, we're introduced to the Abinetto technician called Adi Muva. The Abinettos are these like, they kind of look like fish-faced people. There's a pilot, and in this volume, you probably remember who he is, because he's one of Poe's team.
Right, yeah, and I noticed that in this issue, he was just a technician, and Poe said, you know, a little bit more training, and you'll be up there flying with us, and stuff, and then
right.
My cat closed on my door. She locked herself out. And then The Force Awakens, he was actually one of the X-Wing pilots that was flying over Starkiller Base.
Right. So the Abinetto, they're a new race that was introduced in The Force Awakens. And what I like about them so much is how they're named. As you know, J.J. Mm-hmm. Abrams is like a huge Beastie Boys fan. And right. Most of his movies, they like usually feature a song from it. Like in Star Trek, they had Sabotage in that opening sequence. And then right. In the second movie, they had another song. I can't remember off the top of my head. But JJ is like a known huge Beastie Boys fan. And because he's such a fan of the Beastie Boys, and the Abinetto was a new race that he introduced to Star Wars, every single Abinetto that we see is actually named after either a Beastie Boys album or song. So in The Force Awakens, we have... Yeah, which I think is so awesome. That's like such a cool little like tidbit. I mean, I'm sure certain fans roll their eyes when they hear that, but it's fun to me.
Yeah, that kind of... So if it's not like blatantly obvious, then I'm okay with it. You know, if it's not like... Oh, this one is named Sabotage, or this one is named, you know, you gotta fight for your right to party. You know, it's like, no, as long as it's not something like that, if it's just like true Beastie Boys fans will like, oh, I recognize that. And then it's like right. Everybody else, it just sounds like a regular alien name. Then it's, you know, that's fine.
Right. I think some of them are subtle. Other ones are just like very obvious. So the ones that we see in The Force Awakens, they include Crusher Rudown, who's named after Root Down. Ilko right. Munica, who's named after Ill Communication.
Right.
Brassmon Key. I'll let you guess which one he's named after. Elo Asti, who's named after Hello Nasty. Right. This volume introduces Adi Muva, who's named after Body Movers, obviously. And right. Then there's also Soa Chuan. Soa Chuan? I think that's how it's supposed to be pronounced. And who's named after So What You Want.
Right.
Then with The Last Jedi, some slight spoilers for it, but I don't think it's what I'm going to bring up is that much of a spoiler.
Spoilers.
The movie's been out for 2 years.
Yeah, we were recording this from the future, so it's all good, guys.
Right.
So we see two new Abinettos in The Force Awakens. Fun fact, one of them is played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, named Slow and Low, after Slow and Low. Unfortunately, the other one is unnamed. And he's the guy who, on Canto Bight, rats out Finn and Poe, or not Finn and Poe, Finn and Rose to the police that was like, they parked their ship on the beach. I told them they couldn't park it here.
Oh, right. Yeah, the beach guy. Yeah.
Right.
It's like, you know, okay, me and you are from a generation when a lot of Star Wars had already been out for a long time and everything, but I still kind of remember the pre-special edition time period, because I was kind of born in between when the new special editions came out, and, you know, back when the original ones were out. And so back in the old days, a lot of these aliens didn't have names, you know, especially back in like the 70s and stuff. They didn't give a lot of these characters names. You know, you had one that was just Hammerhead, and then one was just Walrus Man, and, you know, Prune Face and things like that. And it's like only until later that they started actually like giving them real names. And so I still have that instinct of, I don't learn the names, I just call them something weird, like, oh yeah, Beach Bum.
yeah. Basically, yeah, he's just the Beach Bum. But I was thinking with the Beastie Boys naming convention for them, and it's funny that you mentioned it earlier, that you would hate if it was named after this song. All I can think of is, since every other Abinetto is named after a Beastie Boys song, uh-huh, I guess his name would probably be Sabotage, and that would be SABOTAGE, because, of course, it has to be some weird spelling of it.
Right, yeah. Sabotage. Well, I mean, you're talking about, this is a universe that has characters named Maul and Ventress, and what was the...
Grievous.
Yeah, Grievous, and what was Maul's brother's name? His name was...
They pronounce it Savage Opress, but it's definitely, yeah, like, Savage, if you read Opress, it looks like Savage Opress.
Right, yeah, and so it's like... And I mean, the music that they listen to in the cantina is named Jizz, and those aliens that are playing the music are called Jizz Whalers. So, you know... I don't think naming these aliens after Beastie Boys is going to be that big of a deal compared to the names of other aliens and other alien races.
Right. Thankfully, because Disney did away with all the old canon, they're no longer Jizz Whalers.
They still are to me, so I don't know.
I hope that's the whole reason that Disney just kind of cut out all the old canon. They were like, oh man, Jizz Whalers, we just can't have that. And so they just, right, sort of like, just delete everything.
Right, yeah. Oh, goodness.
But that's it for fun facts this week. Poe Dameron Volume 1, Black Squadron. So this comic, it takes place before the events of The Force Awakens. If you remember The Force Awakens, you know that small indie movie. It's all about... the beginning is all about how Poe goes to Jakku, and he's looking for this map of for Luke Skywalker. And there he meets this really old man, kind of looks like Obi-Wan, and his name is Lor San Tekka. And basically, Lor San Tekka, he has the map to Luke Skywalker. And so this comic... takes place before The Force Awakens, and it's all about how Poe found Lor San Tekka. And if that kind of sounds inconsequential to you, you're not entirely wrong.
Now, see, when I was watching The Force Awakens, I was very interested in Lor San Tekka, you know, what his role was, and, you know, what he had to do with Luke Skywalker, and how Poe Dameron knew where to find him, you know, and everything, because and especially because even Kylo Ren in the movie knows who he is, and so, right, I was very interested in that. But then this doesn't really go into a lot of the, like, Lor San Tekka backstory and who he is and everything. It's more of just, you know, oh, we received information that he went to this planet, let's go to that planet and see if they know where he is.
Right. And I think in theory it could be an interesting story. Like you said, if we got more Lor San Tekka stuff about like who he is, why he's like going to all these Jedi stuff, why he knows so much about the Force, that would have been cool. Or even if you didn't have that stuff in it, if it felt more of a chase between the First Order and Poe trying to find Lor. But that's not really what we get. It's kind of, it feels very like stinted almost. Like it's very slow paced. Like, oh,
yeah,
we heard he's over here, so we're going to go try to find him there. And then I read a little bit further ahead, and kind of the rest of the series kind of is similar to that. Is just, oh, and just picking up breadcrumbs and slowly getting towards Lor. Where I think it would have been really cool if it was like, hey, the First Order knows where he is. We know where he is. He's on the run. We have to find him first. And it was just them like hopping throughout the galaxy trying to find him.
Right.
And maybe that would have worked better as like a mini series instead of an ongoing series. It does get better. I think what we're going to talk about today. Well, we'll get into that later.
Yeah. Okay.
That's kind of the setup we get for this. And it starts with Poe and BB-8. They're flying in his X-Wing. They're flying through this cavern on a planet called Orvis, I think. Yeah, Orvis. And we get some banter back and forth.
Ovanus.
Oh, yeah, that's probably a better. Orvanus kind of sounds like a toothpaste, and there's no R in it, which I have put in there, which I should have not.
Right. Well, I'm looking at Wikipedia, and you know, Wikipedia has, like, you can click on this and go to the article about that whole planet, so I can sit here and tell you the actual history of that planet within canon.
It's so funny to me that this planet has a whole history, even though it's only in, like, 3 issues of a comic book.
Welcome to Star Wars. That is... Oh, this character appeared for this, like, short 5-second clip. Let's write an entire backstory about him.
Did you know that they were actually instrumental in bringing down the Death Star?
Right.
It's always stuff like that.
Right, yeah.
And so they're flying through this cavern, and we don't quite know what their mission is yet. We haven't gotten the setup yet. But there's some banter back and forth. Poe's basically... We're along for the ride with Poe. It's kind of showing off, look how cool of a pilot he is. And so he's going through this cavern, rocks are falling, explosions are happening, and you get towards the end of it, and there's these two like large hangar doors that are just slowly closing. And then right before he flies through them, we cut back to a few days before. Does the 2 weeks earlier type of cutback on us.
I really like the way that Poe is written in this. Like, I think Charles Soule has a good grasp of Oscar Isaac and his, like, way of speaking, at least, you know, the way the character speaks in the movies and everything. So I think that is definitely good. Because when he's just, you know, like, chatting back and forth to BB-8 or to later on in the volume when he's talking to... Snap Wexley or ones like that, it's like this actually feels, I can hear Oscar Isaac saying these words.
Right. I think Soule, like you were saying, he really nails like established characters, like you were saying with Snap, and then with Poe himself, also with Leia. I think he kind of fumbles the ball a little bit when it comes to original characters that he brings into the comic book, which we'll get introduced to quite a few in what we're covering today. But they sometimes don't sound like people from Star Wars. They talk, I don't know if it's maybe just a little bit too casually or what it is, but it just feels like a little off. And it just, because it's a little off, you immediately notice it.
Right. Yeah. It feels too much like Earth, which, I mean, to give Charles Soule credit, they also make that mistake in The Force Awakens too, to me, because the way that Finn speaks to Han and everything, it's like, this feels a little too much like Earth, and this is supposed to be in a galaxy far, far away and a long time ago. You know, it's like, it doesn't sound like a fantasy. It sounds more like something I would hear somebody say down the street.
And I don't know, for some reason in the movies, for me, it's never really struck a chord like that. Like when Han in Empire says, I'll see you in hell, or like even in the latest movie, Poe says that it's a big ass door or something like that.
Right.
Stuff like that, for some reason, it doesn't like feel weird to me, maybe because it's being acted and I'm actually hearing it. But for some reason, when it's like the written words, it like just like is glaring to me.
Yeah, yeah. It was very glaring in this in these issues, but we'll get to that as we go.
Right. How did you feel about Phil Noto's art in this?
Okay. This was one of the things that I had an opinion on. I do not like it. I think it's the same situation as the dialogue. When it's, actually, it's the same situation, but in reverse, if that makes sense. When he's doing the original characters that aren't, like, actual actors who have portrayed these characters, it looks fine. You know, all of the settings, all of the backgrounds, all of the vehicles, all of that looks fine. But when he's doing people like Oscar Isaac and when he's doing Carrie Fisher, it's like they look so weird. I could not get past how weird and bizarre and just like the lips for Poe Dameron in this issue were just so weird looking and weirdly shaped, and just like, you know, it's like he was purposely trying to make it look more and more like Oscar Isaac, and it was just like, oh, it's just so wrong.
I definitely think he has more of a stylized art style than what we're used to seeing in these Star Wars comics so far. I don't think he quite gets like photo referencey like some of the more recent issues of Star Wars have been. The funny thing you mentioned about the faces, that never really, I actually kind of liked his portrayals of certain characters. I thought they looked pretty similar to how they look on screen. I never noticed like the lip stuff that you had mentioned. Maybe it's just something that my eyes forgave just because of how stylized it is.
Yeah, it really was bad for me.
For me, what kind of struck me about his artwork is I thought it all looked pretty good, but some of the action just felt very, what's the word for it? It felt very like stunted. It didn't feel like it was actually moving. It felt more like a photograph. It didn't have any sense of movement to it for me.
Right, yeah, there was no energy in a lot of his action scenes.
That really becomes apparent with like some of the like starship fights that we see later on between the X-Wings and the TIE fighters. And even some of the like, we actually get some fisticuffs in this. And even some of that stuff like just comes, I don't know, it comes across like very, it doesn't have the impact it should, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. It really, there's no energy, especially if you're used to, well, like me, I grew up in the 90s, so I am used to the, like Chris Claremont, he's a writer, but Jim Lee is what I meant. Jim Lee and who's the one that did Spider-Man? Todd McFarlane art that's just, you know, they don't really care about the physical anatomy as much as they feel you can feel the energy coming off of these characters and stuff and how they move and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then you go back to Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko and you can really feel the energy and the movement in how they drew their, you know, comics. And it isn't there for me in this one. This one, just the faces looked too squished and weird and had weird lines on them. And when he was trying, when he was doing the characters, like the people that really existed, it's like he was trying to go overboard to make them look realistic, and he put too many of those stylized lines in them that, you know, he did for, you know, the stylized lines in other characters, but he was like more controlled with those because he's like, oh, I know that this character, or, you know, I'm gonna put this many in there because it's gonna look good this way. Whereas with Oscar Isaac and like Carrie Fisher and the way he portrayed them, it's like he put too many of those little details and those little lines and stuff in there and just made it look so just weird and bizarre and there's no energy to it and everything. So it's like, yeah, I did not like the art. I mean, it wasn't horrible. I have seen worse art, but it just wasn't good in my opinion. It really wasn't good.
I didn't find it as bad as you did. But of course, I can definitely see where you're coming from with that, looking back at it. I think there's worse Star Wars comic art that we've been seeing recently, but you know, certain things are going to catch me. It's just a matter of preference.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I understand that. I mean, you know, if this art, I mean, the, like I said, the spaceships and the landscapes and everything of the planet and everything, all of that looked fine. It was just the faces and the people. And then, like you said, the action scenes that just didn't look good to me. So I don't think he's a bad artist. I just think that he was trying to make this tie in too much to what Star Wars should look like, that he didn't really just do his own thing and, you know, kind of, like you said, stylized. If he has a really stylized style of art, then he should let that go and let, you know, and do like a stylized, like you look at the backup comics in these issues, because I read them, you know, as individual issues, not as a full volume, and that it's like a BB-8 backup, the little cartoon like Calvin and Hobbes, but it's BB-8.
Oh, I loved that little backup. That was probably the best part of the comic for me, was that.
Yes, and that doesn't look anything like Star Wars, but it still feels like Star Wars, because you still see the characters, you see these situations, you know that it's, you know, Star Wars, but it's done in a Calvin and Hobbes style art, and it looks fine. I like that. So I think if you're going with a stylized look, you need to push it further than just, you know, what he did with the characters in the main story. And of course, you know, the backup is a different artist than Phil Noto. Phil Noto's, like I said, it's just if he was going to go stylized, he should have pushed it further and not even worried about making the characters look like the actors. But, you know, I mean, like you said, that's a complaint that can be given to a lot of Star Wars comics that are coming out right now. And so it's not just this one, and other ones have done a lot worse than this. It just, for these issues that we read, it really bothered me. It was so weird looking.
And I think probably it's just that action and movement isn't his strong suit. Because I actually really do like his covers. I think his covers look quite excellent. And it's not, those covers, you still see his style, but it's not as pronounced as what you were mentioning. He does all of the Poe Dameron covers. And then there's a few variant covers that I actually got all of, where it was just characters. So it was like Luke, Han, Leia, and Darth Vader. And all of those I really liked. So maybe it's just interior art, where it's, if it's something in motion, it just doesn't work as well. And I'm sure there's a theory behind it of why this doesn't feel as it doesn't have the weight to it that it should. I am not an art student, so unfortunately I can't pinpoint exactly why.
My depth of like art like review is going to be, it just didn't look good. Because I'm not an art student. I like art, but I'm not an art student. So I have no idea. I can't tell you anything else about it, about why. It just doesn't feel right.
I liked his colors, though. I thought his colors were really excellent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the colors are really good.
So it's kind of, like we were saying, it kind of flashes back to a few days before. And Leia kind of lays the groundwork like, hey, we're looking for this guy because the First Order is looking for Luke Skywalker, and I want to find them first, or find him first. And this is actually the first hints that we get of the First Order's their kind of place in the galaxy at this time. There's a lot of mystery between like Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, like how the First Order came about and all of that stuff.
Right.
That's like slowly being introduced in the new canon. But like,
yeah,
almost painfully slow at times.
Right. Well, if you've read the canon books, I don't know if you keep up with the canon books. I've kind of dropped off them recently, but I was keeping up with them for a while. Up until like 7 years before The Force Awakens starts, no one knew what the First Order was. And even Leia, because this was from the Bloodlines book that I remember reading, Leia didn't even know exactly what threat was forming. She just had a sense and kind of knew that there was something forming that was going to threaten the Republic, and she wanted to protect it. And when the Republic refused to try to help her because they found out she was Darth Vader's daughter, she decided to kind of put together this ragtag crew of resistance fighters, and so that they would be the resistance. So they're not an official group because the Republic doesn't want anything to do with them. They didn't believe them, but they kind of formed their own group and was like, we're gonna protect the Republic because we know that these isolated events of violence and things to are not isolated. This is obviously coordinated to like weaken the government, and so there's something threatening the Republic. We have to be prepared for it. And then within those 7 years, where it cuts from there to The Force Awakens, now everybody knows the First Order exists, and the First Order has built itself into this thing, and this is their big, like, we're going to take over the galaxy moment.
Right. And I think you get implications of this that while the Resistance is separate from the Republic, they still report to the Republic. And the New Republic, it's kind of the worst, especially in the viewpoint of this comic book itself. They're almost as dumb right. as the Jedi in the prequels to me, because I know there's some new canon stuff where basically Moth Madma, her whole deal is that she basically wanted to demilitarize the Republic because she didn't want it to be the Empire 2.0. And while right. I'm sure there's a lot of political stuff where there's stuff in favor of that, the demilitarization of the Republic and then also not giving the Resistance the resources and not taking the First Order as serious as a threat, they just come across right. like they're just stupid. And it just makes me like really frustrated at them, not necessarily at the people who created the canon for them, just like them as a group inside the canon are just dumb to me.
Right. Yeah. And it is interesting. I don't know if you've read the Bloodlines book, but it goes into a lot of that, that the Republic was very divided in how it was handling things. Like you said, there was a big push for demilitarization. There was a big push for we need to let each system kind of govern itself. And then there was some that wanted a bigger, kind of stronger government. And the problem is that the First Order, without anyone knowing it, had already infiltrated and had members within the Republic, and so they were kind of destabilizing the government on purpose.
Right.
And so that's why the government just wasn't acting the way it should, because they were not all trying to accomplish the same thing. They had people trying to destabilize the government, and then when Leia comes to them with this like real threat, hey, there's these group of terrorists that you just call isolated groups. They're not isolated groups. They're working for someone, and there's something happening. They're building something out there that's going to threaten us. And then everybody's like, you were Darth Vader's daughter. Why can we trust you? You're just a warmonger. And so that's, it's really interesting to see how the universe or the galaxy was set up in such a way to where the First Order comes in. Nobody even knew it existed until it was too late.
Right. And what's kind of crazy, I haven't read Bloodlines yet. I kind of keep up with the books through this other podcast called Star Wars New Canon Books Club. Slight shout out to them because they do like pretty detailed plot breakdowns of each of the books. But what's kind of crazy, like even in this comic that we're reviewing, the First Order is a threat that they know about, but they're not actually allowed to attack them. They have to be attacked by the First Order first, which is like crazy to me. Like you have this like terrorist group out there that's taking control. And obviously like you see in the movies, like they immediately get rid of the Republic. And then and in The Last Jedi, they're just this huge force to be reckoned with. And the New Republic just as bad as the Jedi of just like, not acknowledging the threat.
Right, not paying attention to the threat that's right in front of them. Yeah.
Right.
I also like that in this comic, they really kind of say, we don't know how big the First Order is. We assume that they're building a large army and they're going to be this huge threat, but we really don't know.
Right.
And so that I like that. It is really interesting how it kind of fleshes out the universe and the state of the galaxy at this time before The Force Awakens. Because then The Force Awakens happens and it just destroys everything, because the First Order destroys the government completely and they start taking over the galaxy and trying to wipe out the resistance. So it is interesting to kind of get that lead up to it.
Right. Yeah, for sure. It's definitely cool to like to see the universe fleshed out a little bit, even if for me it's not fleshed out as much as I'd like it to be. It's still cool to get that, like, right, those breadcrumbs. And I'm sure after,
yeah,
now that episode 8 has been released, we'll get a lot more of that stuff, because you kind of felt them holding back. But now that we know, right, a lot more, I'm sure we'll get a lot more in the new canon. So I think that was good that we discussed that, because it kind of sets the stage a little bit more. Because I think if you didn't really know all of that going into this, it's definitely like a head scratcher at certain times. But at this, right, point in the story, this is kind of when Leia, she gives Poe the mission, go find Lore. He has all the information on Luke Skywalker. And this is also when we're introduced to Poe's team, the Black Squadron. And so, as we mentioned earlier, there's Snap Wexley, who is, I always forget the actor's name, the guy from Heroes.
Greg Grunberg.
Yes, that guy. And he's in The Force Awakens as one of the pilots. He's also in, right, one of the books as a main character. I actually really like Snap. He's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's not in just one of the books. He's in 3 of the books, actually.
Right, right. All of the Aftermath stuff.
Yeah, all of the Aftermath books he's a main character in, but he's a kid at the time that this is, you know, happening. And we even get hints to that when one of the other team members tells him about, or mentions how he fought in the Battle of Jakku, which happened, you know, 20 years ago or whatever it was. So, you know, he must be ancient.
Right.
And he's like, I was only a teenager during that time.
Yeah, he says something along the lines of like, I was 16 at the Battle of Jakku. Get off my case, old man.
Right.
We're also introduced to Cara Coon, Luvo Lo, who is the Duros on the team, the alien. And then Jess Pava. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the infamous Adi Muva.
I don't know if you recognized the character. I'm never going to remember his name, right? So I'm just going to say the blue alien character.
Oh, the Duros?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you recognized him, but he was in a comic book before this.
Really? Oh, is that when he's like, I fought on the Battle of Endor? Is he in the Shattered Empire comic?
Right.
Oh!
Yes. If you remember, because it's been 2 years now, when they put out the Shattered Empire comic book that took place right after the Battle of Endor, or actually, really, the comic started with the Battle of Endor and continued, and that comic book is about Poe Dameron's parents.
Right.
And Poe Dameron's mother was a pilot flying around above Endor during the battle, and she was part of Green Squadron or Emerald Squadron, something like that. And that character was the leader of that squadron.
That's a cool little... I would have, yeah, completely missed it unless you had brought it up.
Yeah, so he's not only tied to Star Wars comics, you know, appearing in one before, but he's tied to Poe Dameron, specifically being the leader of the squadron that his mom served under.
That's cool. That's a nice little additional fun fact for the viewers out there, or listeners, rather.
Yeah, yeah. I had to look it up. I was like, I know this character's appeared in a comic before.
And so after we're introduced to the team, they all jump in their X-Wing fighters. Like you mentioned, Adi Muva, he doesn't actually have his own X-Wing fighter because the Republic sucks, and he hasn't been given one. And so we cut back to the cavern. Hangar doors are still closing, and then Poe just like kind of rearranges his X-Wing to be like flying vertically, and he just like barely makes it through the doors. They shut behind him, and the threat is over.
Now, okay, in this, I think it was this part of the comic that I thought was really interesting, because Poe Dameron seems to have, and I know they've hinted to it before, seems to have a little bit of force sensitivity there.
Well, I mean, it might be something that they're seeding that's like kind of like a fan theory almost. Because like a lot of people have those fan theories about how Han Solo was actually a little force sensitive because of like the crazy crap people.
Right. Okay, I don't remember what it was. It was in one of these issues where Poe Dameron was flying, and so it had to have been there. I guess I just misread it, where he seemed to have a feeling of how to do the maneuvers and everything. And so it was like, oh, you know, well, his mom and dad were given a tree that was like a force tree that had the force, was, you know, and so maybe he is a little bit force sensitive.
I mean, it's certainly possible. There could be like that, just a slight implication that he has a little bit of the force. I mean, technically all the characters do.
Right, yeah, the force is a part of everything, but I just think that that's a little bit, I think he, in my head canon, I think Poe Dameron is slightly force sensitive.
He's got some midichlorians in his blood.
Right, yeah, and you know, if Rey starts training other people to start using the force, like, you know, the spoilers, okay, hold on, oops. Spoiler alert for The Last Jedi. If you haven't watched The Last Jedi, skip ahead just a little bit. We know that at the end of The Last Jedi, we see some kids exhibit force powers. And we know Rey has some force powers, and maybe if she starts training, you know, a few people to start using those force powers, maybe she will train Poe Dameron, and Poe Dameron will start using the force. Who knows?
It's anything is possible. The universe is wide open.
Yeah,
I do like the Hey Fam theory that it's not actually the kids who have the force, but rather the broom that does.
Oh yeah, the broom. The force sensitive broom. That broom's gonna be the last hope of the galaxy.
That's actually the title of episode 9, The Last Broom.
Yeah, The Last Broom. Okay, everybody. Spoilers are over for now, I think. So if you skipped ahead, this is where you can start from.
I think it's pretty safe to assume there'll probably be some light spoilers throughout this episode, but I don't think we'll talk about anything major in it.
Yeah, but I mean, that was a pretty big deal to a lot of people, that the part that we just talked about, so I just wanted to make sure it was extra covered,
right?
As a spoiler alert, for just sure. In case, because I don't want to be yelled at.
So Poe gets through these hangar doors, and this is when he enters this like huge cavern, and in the middle of the cavern is this giant glowing blue egg. And slight spoiler for this comic book, this blue egg is where we're going to get our kaiju from. That makes it
right.
Check off that box for us.
Yeah. So it's a giant Mothra egg. You haven't watched Godzilla enough to know that every time Mothra appears, there's always a giant egg that it has to hatch from. Because, well, I say every time, not every time, but a couple of times that Mothra appeared, he had to appear from an egg or a cocoon or something. So.
Well, I look forward to finding out what that means. So, Poe lands, and when he lands, he's introduced to this group called the Creech. Is that how you pronounce that? C-R-E-C-H-E? The Creech?
Yeah, like Crochet or Critch or, yeah.
Right.
I have no idea. Crazy cult people.
Yeah, basically. They have a huge blue circle on their heads, and we find out from them that they actually worship this egg, and that once this egg finally hatches, whatever hatches out of it is going to save them all and bring them to some place, and they're going to live happily ever after. Doesn't happen. Also spoilers, but we'll get into that later. And so the leader of the Creech, she's like, yeah, Lor San Tekka is here, but I'm not going to tell you where he went, because you're an outsider, and like he became like a part of our group because he actually spent months here like learning our ways and doing that stuff. This is actually kind of a cool character moment for Poe, because she's like, are you going to do the same thing? And he's like, no, I don't have time for that. And it kind of shows how,
right,
even though he is working on like a accelerated timetable, he's like very impatient.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's an impatient person. And we get, again, with The Last Jedi, just seeing it, we get more of that characterization and quality from him in the movie, because he is a very impatient person. So I like that they really have set up this character as being the hotshot, impatient one.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. He, like we were saying earlier, he's definitely in line with his movie counterpart. And it's also at this point where Poe realizes that he actually has a tracker on his X-Wing, and we cut out, He finds out that he has a tracker on his X-Wing, and immediately the creature, like, oh my god, that's a detonator. He's trying to blow up the egg. So a firefight breaks out, and it kind of fizzles out after a point when they realize, oh, it's just a tracker. And we find out that the First Order is here.
Well, I like that Poe Dameron kind of, you know, he put his blaster down and said, you know, because they were shooting at him.
Right, right.
And he was like, you know what, I'm not going to shoot because I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to get involved in a shootout. So let's just put our guns away. So I like that he was like looking for the peaceful solution to it.
Right. He knew that he needed information from these people, so he wasn't just going to start blasting holes through them.
And I mean, and also the fact that they, you know, there's no point. They're not the First Order. They're not the bad guys. Right. They're just people who worship a giant egg. So
Poe's no, of course I'm trying to make a reference and I completely forget the dude's name. Never mind. the dude from Rogue One who just like callously kills people.
Oh, yeah, he's no, I had it and then I lost it. I had it.
He's no Cassian Andor?
Yes, that's it.
Took us a while, but we got it eventually.
Yeah, all I could think of was Agent Callus, and I'm like, no, Agent Callus is in Rebels.
For people who only watch the Star Wars movies, they're just like, what the heck are these guys talking about right now?
Right, yeah. He's no Cad Bane. He's no Ciro the Hutt.
So they find out about the tracker. They finally get to peaceful terms between Poe and the Creech. But this is also when Poe Squadron is like, yo, dude, the First Order's here. And this is when we see their troops kind of flying in, a few jetpack troopers, and they're going into the cavern. And that's kind of the end of the first issue.
Not only that, but we're also running out of fuel.
Right, right. Which was probably a little short-sighted that they're already almost out of fuel, but anyways.
Yeah.
So that's the end of the first issue. The next issue, we're introduced to the First Order officer, T-Rex.
I call him T-Rex. T-Rex? That's wrong, but I just like calling him T-Rex.
I like T-Rex. T-Rex is kind of like a nickname he would have as a stormtrooper, because we find out that he was once a stormtrooper.
Right, yeah.
But, so we are introduced to him, and he's like flying this speeder bike through the cavern, and they get to where the egg is being kept, and there's these two huge doors. And he's like, hey, we got to get through these doors. And this is when he drops like to the stormtrooper, you know, I used to be one of you guys, which we don't see payoff in these issues that we're covering today. But later on in the volume, we get more of who he was as a stormtrooper.
Okay, I was hoping it paid off later because I haven't read ahead and read the ones ahead of these issues. So I haven't been keeping up with the series. So I'm glad it pays off eventually. Otherwise, it's just like, why did he keep referencing that?
I do think he should reference it less, because it's at a certain point, it's like, yeah, we get it. You used to be a stormtrooper. But yeah, we see later on that he was like, it's a whole other thing.
Well, I mean, he's like that guy at work that's like, you know, I used to do this and I used to do that, and now I'm here and now I'm moving up in the world. It's like you're stocking groceries at Walmart. you haven't moved up in the world.
Right. He's the guy who's like, you should really learn from my example and maybe someday you'll be where I am.
Right.
And I think that's kind of like, even the stormtroopers themselves are like, yeah, we know. We get it, guy.
Right, yeah. So it's like, that's exactly what T-Rex is like. He's just like, he's that guy.
What's kind of funny is that Sol, he does the same like setup that he did in the previous issue. We get a little bit of the First Order, and then we flash back, and it's him, and he's actually on the ship called the Carrion Spike.
Yeah, I remembered that ship because I had to I stopped and I was like, okay, I recognize the name of that ship from something. And I had to go back and look it up, and it was like, oh yeah, it was from the Tarkin book. A lot of people, I think, skipped over that that book in the Tarkin book about Grand Moff Tarkin, because it was one of the first ones that came out in the new canon, and so a lot of people just kind of like weren't into the new canon yet, and so they skipped it or whatever. But I really liked that book. That book was really good. It adds a level of dimension to Tarkin, and we find out that he named his ship, his own private ship, the Carrion Spike, after something from his home planet.
That's pretty cool.
And that ship is the one that T-Rex is using now, so he's actually using Grand Moff Tarkin's private ship,
right.
Private Corvette.
Which is pretty cool. It's like a cool little Easter egg for people who know what it is. And I think if you find out, like, oh, it's Grand Moff Tarkin's ship, that's still like, oh, that's pretty cool. I don't know if they ever explain how he got it, but I mean, I'm sure they do somewhere. But yeah, I haven't read Tarkin, but I heard it's really good.
Tarkin wasn't using it anymore, so...
Right. After its former owner got exploded. So he's on board a ship, and it, like, when you go inside it, it kind of feels like it has, like, a weird, like, 60s Free Love vibe to it. Did you get that vibe from it, or is that just me?
Yes. Yeah, I got that vibe, but that is definitely the thing that Tarex, whatever his name is, T-Rex, has done to that ship, because if you've read that book, or if you know anything about Grand Moff Tarkin, he was not the type of person to allow anything like that on his ship, and he was a very, very, very conservative person, and so the fact that, you know, T-Rex is, like, flying the Grand Moff's private Corvette, and he's turned it into this, like, love palace that he can just, you know, have all these slave women around, slave men to do whatever he wants and everything. It's just like, you just really get a sense of why this guy is such an annoying character.
See, I actually really like T-Rex.
Well, I think he is supposed to be annoying, but I just really got tired of reading the huge, gigantic word balloons of him just describing every little thing that he was doing.
Right.
So I was just like, every time, after the first few pages, every time T-Rex started talking, I was just like, oh, blah, 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 blah. Oh, now Poe Dameron's saying something. Oh, now he's blah, 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 blah. You know, it's just like, I just could not read all of that. There was too much dialogue coming from this one character. He talked too much, and it was annoying, and I couldn't read it.
I didn't have quite as the same issue as you did. I actually really like T-Rex, because he's a little tropey, because he's kind of this, like, he's basically a spy, because he works for the First Order, like their security bureau. I don't know what they call it, but it used to be the ISB, but whatever, right. The First Order equivalent, yeah. Of that. He's basically a spy, and he's kind of like this very sophisticated, doesn't say any bull crap, kind of cuts through it. And he also has like an air of, like, he just seems like such a horny dude for some reason to me. That's kind of how he comes across.
Okay.
He's just like really into that, you know?
I don't know about you, but when I did read his dialogue, I pictured him with a French accent. I don't know why. Why are there French in space? I don't know, but it's just, that's what was in my head.
I could kind of see that. I know that the character himself is a little tropey, but I actually really ended up liking him. And you get actually, past these first three issues, the more and more you read of him, you begin to like him a little bit more. I don't think he's supposed to be annoying to the reader. I think he's definitely supposed to be annoying to the characters in-universe, because you kind of get the sense that the First Order, they only use him because he gets stuff done, but everyone seems like they're just, like, annoyed with him.
Right. I definitely think he's, like, again, to reference Star Wars Rebels, he's a lot like Agent Kallus, because Kallus, you know, was just a nobody, nothing character to begin with, but as the series progressed, he really just kind of like developed, and now he's one of my favorite characters in Star Wars Rebels.
Right. And I think Terex, he definitely gets to be, he's more of a fun character than we're used to seeing from like an evil faction in Star Wars. And you get that more and more as you go along.
I want to read some of this dialogue in the voice that I think he has.
There's gonna be more stuff we have to cut.
You try and stop me.
I'll remind you that I am editing this episode.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He says, "My name is Agent Derex of the First Order. I am very pleased to meet you all. What's going on with that egg, by the way? That thing is just fabulous." I cannot get past the fact that he, to me, sounds like Pepe Le Pew in my head.
That's not the worst French accent I've heard. I can definitely see where you can get that accent from, especially with how tropey of a character he is. But I don't know, for some reason it just works for me.
It's the little mustache. I think it's the little mustache.
It's probably the little mustache, yeah.
I agree, Phasma. The First Order is not the Empire. But perhaps one day, if we all work very hard and do our very, very best, it could be. Away now, my friends. Captain Phasma and I need to speak privately. Just, I cannot give as that is the voice. That is the voice that I'm reading. I want to do a live reading now of this because it's fun to do.
I'll have to read more and see if that voice comes to me while I'm reading.
A young pilot in the Republic Navy, extremely skilled by all accounts, recently recruited into Organa's resistance, which is working to thwart the First Order's noble efforts to tidy up the galaxy. Oh, goodness. Okay, I will stop now, but that is so much fun to do. Oh, Phasma, you know you'd want me. You know you love me. Don't fight it. I don't know what it is, but I just immediately went to Pepe Le Pew every time he talked, which I guess is why when I get to the long monologues, I cannot read it. It just turns into blah, 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 blah. Because doing the long monologues in that voice is really hard. Even when you're just hearing it in your head, even if it's just in your own head, hearing that voice for that long just is not good.
That's, like we said before, I guess a preference thing.
I feel like I had more fun reading this comic, even though I liked it less than you did.
Well, these early issues, I don't know, they're okay. They're just kind of meh to me, you know? Like, even as I was writing the outline for them for this and having to, like, reread it a little bit, I was kind of like, okay, and this happens, and this happens. It's really not until, like, the second half of the volume where it kind of gets like, oh, this is really good now. But anyways, so he's on the Carrion Spike, and he's getting debriefed from Captain Phasma. And she's like, hey, recently, Poe Dameron, he captured all this intel from us. We need to know what you found out. And there's like a editor's note that's like, oh, by the way, there's Star Wars books. You should go read them if you want to know what she's talking about. And so he's like, yep, I'll do it. And she's like, don't fail. And I kind of liked his line. He's like, I'm so sick of you people basically always telling me not to fail.
Yeah.
And this is, again, when we hint at his origin as a stormtrooper. And she's like, it's because we know where you come from that we tell you not to fail.
Yeah, I really like the line, too, because he says,
how many times do I need to succeed before all of you stop telling me not to fail?
I am not going to stop doing the voice. The voice is here to stay.
I'm just going to edit in, like, Microsoft Sam every time it comes out.
But yeah, but no, I did like that line, how many times do I have to succeed before you tell me to stop failing? You know, I thought that was actually a really good line.
Yeah, and I think this is when we first see, like, Terex is actually, he's a pretty cool character. I do like, and we get more of him. He's actually, right. I hear he's kind of like the main villain of the whole Poe Dameron comic. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing more of him. So we flash back to the present. Terex, he blows the doors off of the chamber and they enter in. Poe's nowhere to be found. His X-Wing is gone. his X-Wing is gone, and Tarek approaches the Creech, and he's like, hey, I'm looking for Poe Dameron. And the Creech are like, Poe Dameron? Never heard of him. And he's like, yeah, sure. And so this is kind of when he starts to put the pressure on them a little bit. Even though they claim Poe Dameron isn't there, his men immediately find the tracker that they put on his ship, and he's like, yeah, sure, he's not here.
Yeah, yeah, and they put the pressure on him just a teeny bit, you know, by flamethrowing the egg that they worship. Just a little bit of pressure.
I'm surprised he doesn't have a line about, what if I turned up the heat or something like that.
Right, yeah. No, but he has a really great omelet line. See, again, yeah. He's French. Omelets are French. I am telling you, look, if Ben Mendelsohn can be a space Australian in Rogue One, then this guy can be space French.
I suppose it works. Have we ever heard any French-accented characters in Star Wars? Probably in the Clone Wars, that TV show. Probably. I feel like they do that there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's been at least one race of aliens that's just like all French.
Probably. Knowing Star Wars, they would probably do something like that. So we cut to Poe, who's kind of hiding in the cavern, and he calls the Black Squadron. He's like, hey guys, I need some leverage in here. Like, things are going a little south on my end. And so this is also when we find out that the Resistance can't actually attack the First Order, which is, like I mentioned before, super dumb. And so they're like, we have to distract them some way.
I understood that idea of, yeah, we can't be the one to, because you're basically at this point in time, the First Order and the Resistance were at a stalemate of, we both know you're there, and we may poke at each other some, but neither one of us is going to be the one to launch the first strike to start the war until we're ready.
Right.
And that's kind of, you know, we kind of actually got into that in The Force Awakens, where the first real big strike that the First Order did was to destroy the entire government. So, you know, it's just like, yeah.
Yeah.
But I definitely see that, where you're two groups of people, and you're just at this point of, we may poke and prod each other, but we're not going to initiate an actual battle,
right?
Because that would end in a war that we don't want to, you know, to start yet.
Yeah, they're basically playing chess with each other. I just think I was more so saying that the in-universe, like the Republic, right, itself is just dumb for making that a rule for them.
Yeah, well, but I mean, was it the Republic that made that, or was it Leia that made that decision? Because like you said, it could have been just a tactical decision made by the people in charge of the Resistance, because I don't know if the Republic even wants to admit that the First Order exists.
I got the sense that it was the Republic, but maybe I'm off. I don't know. It seems like Leia wouldn't mind, like, just taking them on head on. It seems like she was kind of being constrained by the Republic, but that might be subtext that's not actually there. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. Either way, they quickly move past it because they attack the First Order anyways. The Duros, Lulu, whatever his name is. Lulu.
Yeah, we'll call him Lulu. We're calling the other guy T-Rex. We'll call that one Lulu.
So Lulu, he's like, hey, I'm in an A-Wing. And I think the line he says is actually pretty funny. He's like, it's a good thing we're not all in X-Wings, which I kind of felt like a little bit of a slight jab to The Force Awakens. I'm in an A-Wing. I'll just fly through really fast, get their attention, and then that can be the start of our distraction. And so he flies past the carrier. Nothing happens. And so he's like, well, you know what? I'm going to completely disobey protocol. He flies past again, but this time he fires on the carrier. The TIE fighters are scrambled. We get another dogfight in the air, which I thought was pretty cool. And the X-Wing pilots and the A-Wing, they like quickly take down the TIE fighters, and like they accidentally blow up the courier ship itself, which wasn't supposed to happen. Even though there's like right, a hint, yeah, to like there's something more there that's kind of gets seeded for later. So back inside the chamber, Tarek is still with the Creech, and he's like, hey, where's Poe Dameron? And he's about to, like, attack the Creech, but Poe Dameron, being the hero that he is, he comes out and he's like, whoa, 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 don't fire on them. And he's like, just don't harm the Creech. And so they kind of do more back and forth that I'm sure you skipped a lot over because of the long monologues, right, yeah, he does.
Yes, definitely.
And so Terex is like, hey, why are you here, by the way? And Poe's just like not giving up the information. And I think this is actually when he starts to turn up the pressure and he flames the eggs a little bit. And the creature just like, oh my god, he's flaming the eggs. Like, this is insane. Like, what the heck?
Right.
And Poe is basically like, hey, I have the upper hand, actually, because my whole squadron just took out your whole squadron of people. And then Terex is just like, oh, really? And I feel like he you don't see him actually twirl his mustache, but it kind of feels like he does.
You believe so, Monsieur Dameron.
And he reveals that, just more Microsoft Sam, he reveals that in low orbit is actually a carrier with a bunch of TIE fighters, and you see all the TIE fighters get scrambled, and there's just like a huge horde of them coming down on the planet. So you're just like, oh, crap. And Terex is like, I actually have the upper hand here. And that's kind of where issue 2 ends. And now on to issue 3. Oh, crap. I just realized I do not actually have a breakdown for issue 3 because I only did the first two pages of my outline. From what I remember, it's at this point that the TIE fighters enter into the space around the cavern and things are going bad for the Black Squadron. Not only do they have all these TIE fighters to deal with, they're also running low on gas. And this is actually kind of a little cool because we get a little bit more character from Snap. We find out that he's like romantically involved with, was it Jess or Care that he's romantically involved?
It was Jess.
Right. And so he's like, hey, in case I don't make it off this mission, these past 2 weeks have been like the best of my life. And she's like, shut up, you big dummy. Let's just get out of this mission. And it's a nice little romantic moment thrown in there. I do like Snap as a character.
I definitely really enjoyed that. I like the development of it. Because, I mean, we've basically, if you have been keeping up with Star Wars canon, we have seen Snap Wexley go from a young kid all the way to being a full-grown adult and, you know, starting this relationship. So I want to see more of Snap. I want to see, like, his comic book about his story, because I really enjoy that character, just seeing him develop, you know, from being so young to being older and being the, you know, this great pilot and being in this relationship and everything. I want to see more of that.
Right. I think it's actually pretty clever, too, what Sol's doing here, because he can't develop Poe to a certain point, you know? Like, he can't develop him past to where he's in the movies. He's kind of constrained with what he can do with Poe. But all these characters around Poe, that's kind of where his playground really is and where he can, like, develop those characters and those relationships and their relationships to Poe. Mm-hmm. And even introduce new villains like Terex, for example, is another way that he can have character development, but not necessarily for the main character itself. So, yeah, I think all of that is really cool. Right. And like you were saying, Snap is just, he's just cool. I like him. He's a cool little pilot, dude.
Yeah, I like him.
So back to the comic book. Things are looking pretty dire. The egg's heating up. What happens next? Does the egg actually crack at this point, or does something else happen that I don't remember?
Yeah, I think it's this time at this point that the egg actually hatches, and we get to see the monster that's inside it. Which just looks like a man, a blue man with wings.
Somehow they made it look like a dude in a rubber suit, even though it's a comic book.
Yes! How did they draw this character, this monster, to look like a guy in a rubber suit? Like, why? It could have been anything!
Right, and so the creature is super psyched about it, because they're like, oh my god, our savior is finally here, he's gonna save us. And then he just immediately attacks them. Which is kind of, it's a little funny.
Yeah. I actually do like the design of the monster. Like, I like how he's like that bright blue and he looks like he's glowing and all of that kind of stuff. And I like the wings, but I just think it is really weird that he just looks like a guy in a suit.
Right. Yeah, especially in Star Wars where you could have done like really anything with him.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars has so many bizarre creatures, but then this is just like, I mean, there are space whales in Star Wars.
Right.
But this just looks a little too weird to me, even though I do kind of, like in any other context, like in a superhero comic book, that character design or that design for the monster would look good, but just in Star Wars, for some reason, it just doesn't feel like it belongs.
Yeah, and there's been some new, like, canon stuff, even in the movies, that I've felt has felt off. Like, The Force Awakens, it kind of reminds me of the Rathtars in there, like how people don't like them.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And then even in Rogue One, there's the poor gullet that's like that tentacle-y monster.
Oh, yeah.
And so this shows up, and it just starts attacking everyone, and the cavern's crashing in on itself, and things are just going from bad to worst. And then another kaiju shows up from completely out of nowhere. Like, this wasn't even hinted at previously. Like, where did this guy come from?
I was going to ask you if you could tell where that one come from, because I was like, maybe I missed something. Maybe I'm just not paying attention enough, because like you said, I was under, you know, like, time constraints. And so I was like, I was going to ask you, where did that one come from? But he really just materialized out of nowhere.
Right. Yeah, he came out of thin air. And this one, it looks exactly like the other kaiju, except it's black and it glows like faintly of red. And he looks pretty cool. He's a pretty cool looking dude. And then we realize, oh, this is the actual good kaiju in this fight. And so they start fighting.
Yeah.
The cavern, the ceiling to the cavern just gets blown off the top. And we cut to the fight outside and everyone's like, what is going on? This is just insane. And their reaction to it is pretty much my reaction to it as a reader.
Yeah, it's like, what is that? What is going on?
Right. And so Poe sees this as his way out. He fisticuffs with Terex for a little bit, but Terex like, you think you can take me, you punk? And he just like, they go back and forth as usual. And they see this.
Yeah.
How does this all play out? Remind me. I'm so sorry. I was supposed to have the outline finished.
The main thing I remember is that at one point BB-8 snatches T-Rex's blaster.
Right.
And gives it to Poe, which I really liked. I thought that was really cool. And I know they scuffle for a bit, but then when the two kaiju are fighting and it's all crashing down, it's just like everybody just runs away and just tries to get out away from there. And so I know that T-Rex kind of got away, but then so did, you know, they T-Rex and his men all just kind of escape and get out.
Right. Doesn't it kind of end, so let's talk about the kaiju fight itself, because the kaiju fight is kind of cool. It's these two winged monsters kind of punching each other for a bit.
Right, and that's what our podcast is about, so maybe we should actually talk about the kaiju.
It'd probably be good to talk about our namesake. The fight cut, the way they end the fight is like super Godzilla-y too, because it's the good kaiju, like basically atomic breaths the other kaiju through the mouth and just like kills him that way.
Right. It's just like Gareth Edwards' Godzilla 2014, which if you haven't listened to the episode, go back and listen to our episode about that. But yeah, it does basically the same thing. It just blasts its the other one's head off.
Yeah, blasts its the other one's head off, and that's kind of the end of the fight. So, do you think that I guess the whole setup up to this point has been to get this kaiju out there and to get it going and have a fight between two kaiju. Do you think that's how they approached it, or do you think they approached it? Oh, we have the storyline where Poe goes to this cult and they know about Lars, and then the First Order shows up. But, you know, that's by itself is kind of a boring story, so we have to add this other element to it. Because it kind of feels a little tacked on, even though it's like, it's kind of building to it, but like not really at the same time.
Right. Yeah, I definitely think it was, we have this cool Star Wars story, but we need something to make it more comic booky, because it's not comic booky enough.
Right.
And so they tacked on this because it, like you said, the other monster just kind of materializes out of nowhere, just out of thin air. So it's like it wasn't even explained or hinted to that there might be others of the species out there, and there's like no explanation about what these monsters are, where they are, what are where they're from, what they can do, all of these things. It was just nothing there, And so, and then when they leave, or when the story's over with, as far as I know, they're never brought up again. Right. So it's just like, okay. And, you know, so I definitely think that it was the Star Wars story that they needed to tack on some more comic book.
They needed to spice it up a little bit.
Right.
What do you think it's like to be a Creech? Because you spent your whole life worshipping this egg. It hatches, and then it's not even the savior you were promised it to be. The savior's actually this complete different thing, and it's just like, what's the point, I guess, at a certain point?
Well, I mean, the second creature does take them away somewhere. It just, like, flies off into space with them on its back, so apparently it has an atmosphere around it. Because otherwise, how are they going to breathe in space?
Right. Or that's the promise they get, is they all die in space because there's no oxygen.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I remember how it ends now. So the two kaiju are fighting. Poe has Terex at gunpoint, and he's like, it is actually kind of a funny little moment for Poe, because he's like, whoa, kind of makes you wonder. And that joke kind of hit for me. That was pretty funny. But they kind of reach a stalemate between the First Order and the Resistance, and they're both like, hey, I won't tell anyone if you don't tell anyone, and they both kind of go their separate ways. So it's almost like you have the climax of the two kaiju fighting, but then the narrative climax itself is like super anti-climax to me.
Right, yeah, I remember it now that you say it. Yeah, it was very anticlimactic, and it was just like, the Creech lady tells him the information he was looking for, where Lor San Tekka came from.
Oh, right.
Or not came from, but where he went to, so now they know where to go next. And it was just like, it was like just petered out. It was not a great ending to the story.
And what kind of, like, what makes it even worse is that the rest of this volume, like issues 4 through 6, they actually go to this prison in it. We're not going to get into detail on it, but they actually go to this prison, right. And all of the prison stuff and like everything they do there is super, super interesting. And like, it's all like really fun and really enjoyable. And it's kind of like, you're kind of just left wondering, why didn't they just start at the prison, since it's so much better than the first few issues we got?
Right. Yeah, definitely. Our rating system is watch it or skip it. In this case, it would be read it or skip it, and I'd say skip it. Right. I mean, you know, this is a kaiju podcast, so let's look at it from the perspective of a kaiju comic book, because the monsters made no sense. The fight was kind of cool, but the one just came out of nowhere. There's no explanation of what they were, where they're from, all of that kind of stuff. And then they fly off into nowhere. You know, it really was just not a good giant monster comic. And it was only a so-so Star Wars comic.
Yeah, I think for me, like, do they have these issues on Marvel Unlimited?
Yes. Yes, they do.
I think it's worth it to, like, try out, like, maybe the first issue and, like, kind of just, like, breeze through the rest of it. Because the series does get better. Like, the volume, we're technically supposed to be covering the volume, but we're only covering the kaiju parts. Because I don't think we had, I don't think neither of us had the steam to go through the rest of it. But the rest of the volume is actually good.
No.
It's, like I said, it's unfortunate that these first three issues are so, like, kind of mediocre, I would say. And the art in it, you'll either like it like I do, or you'll kind of, like, it'll put you off like it did for Travis. But yeah, so I think I wouldn't necessarily buy this, but I think if it's, like, at no extra cost to you to, like, kind of just breeze through it, I think maybe try it out. The rest of the volume is good. I can definitely recommend that part where they go to the prison and it's everything on there. But yeah, that's kind of where I left it hanging was just like, man, yeah. I don't think it's not something I'm going to go back to and reread ever, you know?
Right. Yeah, I definitely, when I say skip it, I say skip the first three issues, because if four on is better, then just jump right to there, because I don't think that you're going to gain anything from these first three issues that you need to, you know, to have to read issues 4 through whatever. So I would definitely just jump into issue number 4, or, you know, if you're reading the volume, just skip those first three little sections of it and just jump right into that fourth issue and that storyline, the new storyline.
And I think I mentioned also earlier how the series kind of reminded me of Soul's Darth Vader series, because for me, his Darth Vader series, it was the same exact thing where the first two issues just did not connect with me at all. I found them to be kind of mediocre. But then once it got towards the end of that first story arc in Darth Vader, and it was probably around the same issue number, it was probably around issue 4, it just suddenly like connected with me.
Huh.
And it's kind of the same with this series. Those first three issues just were like kind of meh to me. But then once it gets past that and it gets to that first fourth issue, it just it hits its stride. So I don't know. Maybe it's a Charles Soule thing. Maybe it's just he has this ongoing series and he's like, this is the overall story I want to tell. And maybe it takes him a while to finally hit his pace with it.
Right. He may just not know where to start, you know, and how to start his stories to, you know, to get into it. And just so the first couple of issues is always lacking.
And that's probably where it's different from his miniseries, because he knows how much space he has to tell a certain story. So he's able to like just get it rolling a lot faster than he is with these ongoing series. So I don't know. So it kind of stinks that the first comic we talk about, we both have kind of middling reviews about it. But I guess that's life. So that was Poe Dameron Volume 1, Black Squadron. Well, half of Volume 1. Pretty middling for kaiju fans out there. The second half is better, but doesn't have any kaiju in it. So that kind of dings it for us. But let's move on to some of the single issues that were released this month. Starting with Giants Issue 1, which has been published by Dark Horse Comics, and it's done by the Valderrama brothers?
Mm-hmm, right.
What did you think about this first issue, Travis?
I enjoyed it. I did like it, and it was setting up the world very well. It didn't have a lot of like long exposition about, you know, this is what this is, and this is... In fact, if you weren't even paying attention, you could miss the actual part that explains what's going on in the world, you know, in it. So yeah, I like that. I like that it just jumps straight into the action. I'm always going to be the person that I like the monster stuff more than I like the human stuff, even when the human stuff is really good in my kaiju material. And so this story, the story part of it isn't my cup of tea, but as far as the monsters are concerned, I really enjoyed it. I like the design Right. of the monsters. The design of the monsters is kind of like a mixture of Cloverfield and Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Like, it really has that kind of like a mixture of those two things together. And those designs are really good. And when you mix them together, you have a really interesting, different look to a monster.
Right. I think, yeah, the art was definitely like excellent in this issue. It's actually funny that you bring up it's actually the main plot is the human subplot, which is all about these people who, because these giant monsters have come to Earth, they have to live underground. And so there's these two kids who kind of want to up their social ranking. And so in order to do so, they have to go to the surface.
Right. Because the area that they live in underground is basically controlled by a bunch of gangs. And so to be able to survive in this landscape, they have to join one of the gangs. And so they're trying their best to join. It's basically like if you've ever seen the movie Warriors, the Warriors. It's a lot like that. Well, sort of like that in the sense of you get these gang members, these young gang members, and trying to survive and everything. So it does kind of like feel a little bit like the Warriors.
And so these kids, they kind of want to join the gang. In order to do so, they have to go up to the surface, and then things kind of go from there. It's interesting that you mentioned that you kind of always prefer the kaiju part to the human part. I definitely agree with you there. What's cool about this issue is that actually at the end of it, there's a letter from the editor, and he kind of goes into to what he likes about these big giant monster movies, these kaiju movies, and how he loves the kaiju, but the human part, for the most part, it always ends up being kind of an excuse for the kaiju to fight. Obviously, there's exceptions. He references the original Godzilla movie as being like the monster part and the human part are both really excellent. And so that's what he wanted out of this comic, is to just not just be cool kaiju fighting each other, but also have a good human plot in it too.
Oh yeah. Well, I was thinking, like we've even talked about in our previous episodes that, like I do like just watching the giant monsters fight, and I like the giant monster aspect of it, but having that human side to the story and it being well done makes the story feel more like relatable and kind of ties you, you know, gets you involved in the story. The first Godzilla, Gojira, did that really well because, like we've mentioned before, it was an allegory for atomic fallout, something that the Japanese were very afraid of after the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So that anxiety from the humans makes that movie legitimately frightening. And having that, you know, human side of it is not a bad thing, but it, like you were talking about, it's a good, it, you have to have a good balance between the two, because if you only ever focus on the humans and not enough on the monsters, then you get kind of a weird thing. You get Godzilla 2014 almost, because, you know, a lot of that was a little bit more focused on humans than...
You need both plots to be just as interesting as the other one, which is hard to do when one of the plots involves like these really cool looking giant monsters. I think for Giants issue one, there's some setup to get the plot going, but I do like the two kids. You can tell like they do have more of a personality than what we've seen so far in these, with these plots sometimes. I don't think there's a lot there yet, but I'm interested in seeing how it expands as it goes along. What's also cool about this is that there's a definitive like beginning and end. It's not just an ongoing. So I'm sure we'll get a lot more of that character development and that plot development. And there's actually even a theme, which I sometimes have a hard time when there's not a narrative theme and things of all about like ambition and stuff like that. So I'm interested in seeing how it develops. I think it's very promising, but we'll see how it goes. For sure, the art is great on this. For you, was it a skip it, read it, borrow it, or?
Oh, it's definitely a read it, especially if you're a giant monster fan. I definitely think this is a good... There's not as much giant monster in the first issue as you might like, but I mean, it is the first of five issues, so we are going to get more giant monster stuff as we go. So, but I definitely say read it, because it was enjoyable. I enjoyed it.
Even if you can't get it as single issues, I'm sure they'll have a trade out in no time. So yeah, definitely a read it from us.
Oh yeah.
For our second single issue this week, we have Black Panther: Long Live the King, which is actually a Comixology first. So this is a digital first comic, being put out by Marvel. What did you think about this issue, Travis?
I have to come clean. I've mentioned before, Godzilla is my favorite, like, character. Godzilla reaches a new level of love. Like, I love it on a level that nothing else reaches. But as far as superheroes go, Black Panther is my favorite character. He is my favorite. Him and Spider-Man and Storm are my three favorite characters in Marvel, and So anytime there's a Black Panther comic, I'm instantly going to be like, yeah, I'm going to read it and I'm going to enjoy it because I just enjoy the character so much. I enjoyed this comic a lot.
It was funny because I was reading this and it was before we found out there's kaiju in it. And as soon as it showed up, I immediately took a picture and I was like, did you write this comic? Because this is like totally in your wheelhouse. It not only has Black Panther, but it also has giant monsters in it.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's like it's this comic was written for me. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed because it's a little bit different. It has a different feel to it than the current ongoing Black Panther comic because that's written by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Ta-Nehisi Coates is not writing this one. It's another writer who's never written a comic book before. As far as I know, this is her first time. She's an actual writer. She's written a lot of books and a lot of books that people love. Like I've heard people say they enjoy her writing, so they were looking forward to reading this. So it doesn't have that same feel that Ta-Nehisi Coates has, which I'm one who enjoys the Coates run on Black Panther.
Oh yeah, me too.
But if you're one who doesn't enjoy that, yeah. But there's some people who don't enjoy it, and so if you don't enjoy the Ta-Nehisi Coates version of Black Panther, then give this one a shot because it is a little bit different. It doesn't feel exactly the same, but it still feels like it's set in the same world, which is brilliant, which is really good.
I think it's a nice little companion to it for sure. I think my only gripe with it is that the first few pages they execute really excellently. Black Panther's in the capital city. This giant monster comes and it causes this blackout and this earthquake. And so you get that set up and it's like, okay, I'm in. And then the momentum they've kind of built up from that kind of just gets immediately like halted, you know? Because you kind of get this setup right. With the political side of it, with them reacting to it. Like no one else has seen the giant monster. It was only Black Panther who saw it. And them trying to like save people around the city and make sure that's safe. And that's okay, but it felt like it was going to be, it kind of had a sense of rising action that kind of just plateaued and stopped for me. But I'm still interested to see where it goes. I still liked it overall. It just wasn't like, I want to put this up there. Like, I think it's a good companion to Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther run, but I wouldn't put it quite as at the same caliber for me, at least.
Yeah. To me, the writer, I'm going to try to say her name, but I'm sorry if I mispronounce it. We've already kind of established early on in this podcast that we're not the best at pronouncing names. Nnedi Okorafor. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. But the way she writes let me rephrase that. The way that she builds Wakanda around the Black Panther, I really enjoyed. And a lot of that is inspired by the Ta-Nehisi Coates one, because the reason why I love the Ta-Nehisi Coates run on Black Panther so much is because he has done something very few writers, even Christopher Priest, who did one of the best Black Panther runs ever, had trouble with building up Wakanda as a real country.
Right.
Like, it was more of a place setting. It wasn't an actual personality. It wasn't a real country with personality and with differences in people. And we didn't see their daily life and things like that. And Christopher Priest,
it was just a background, not really a place.
Right. And with Ta-Nehisi Coates, he was like, I'm going to build this into an actual realistic African nation. And so with Ta-Nehisi Coates' run, his version of Wakanda is the best representation of an African nation, that style that's called Afrofuturism. Mm-hmm. That it is just the best representation of that I've ever seen in a Black Panther comic. And Nnedi, the writer of this Black Panther comic, kind of takes some cues from that and does explore a little bit more about the day-to-day life. Like, we even see a Wakandan woman going to the ATM machine.
Right.
Like, we see those little daily life things that you wouldn't normally get in a comic book, because most of the time comic books are focused on the superhero doing his superhero thing and not on the everyday life of things. But I like that with Wakanda, especially because it is a made up place. It's not, you know, something that actually exists, but building out that history and that personality of that country makes it feel more real. And I think that's great. And so that's one of the things I really loved about this comic.
Like, you see, like, the apartment buildings, and there are these, like, cubes set up on top of each other. You even see, like, a surgeon area. So yeah, that's definitely a cool aspect I hadn't thought about, but it is cool to see those slice of life moments for Wakanda. How did you feel about the art by Andre Lima Arihara? Arihara, maybe? I've seen his art before. I think he did some of the art in Hickman's Fantastic Four run, which I love. And I thought it was pretty good in this issue, okay, too. Like, I've seen some people online be like, his art was terrible, but I didn't think it was terrible. I actually really liked the style of it.
I tolerated it.
You just want everything to look like Jim Lee, don't you?
Yeah, no. I don't like Jim Lee that much. Jack Kirby? Yeah, maybe. I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it because, I mean, I'm a person who defends and enjoys reading the Black Panther run that John Romita Jr. did, and that art is just really, you know, kind of I like John Romita Jr., but he's not good unless he's working on Spider-Man, generally. Usually that's where his best work is done. But, so, you know...
Yeah, Romita is pretty divisive, for sure. You either love him or you hate him.
Well, and so, seeing as I enjoy that comic despite the art, I definitely enjoyed this comic in spite of the art. I don't think the art was fantastic, but I think it's serviceable. It's definitely serviceable. It definitely, especially for a digital first comic book, it works fine. And it, you know, and you get to see the differences in characters. You can tell, you know, in their faces that they're different people. They don't all have the bad case of same face that a lot of artists do have. So, I mean, he did a decent job, but I don't particularly love his style.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And different strokes for different folks, like we've said, going back to the Phil Noto discussion.
Right.
I liked him. I think the only thing noticeable for me was some of his facial expressions, like when the people are like freaked out or like they're scared. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that doesn't always hit for me, but like everything else, like I think the cityscape itself, it has that, like you were saying, that Afro-futuristic vibe. That's really cool. And then like even like Black Panther's suit itself looks suitably cool.
Yeah.
So I would say definitely check it out for sure. What about you?
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially because I'm such a big Black Panther fan, that I definitely say if you love Black Panther, definitely check it out. And we didn't even really talk about too much the giant monster, because the first issue, the monster was only in there for a short period, and you don't know whether it actually was there at all or not, you know, whether it was a real thing or whether it was a hallucination or something. So I like the mystery of this giant monster, this giant squid looking monster that was attacking them. I like that mystery of we don't know what that was or where it came from, and they're just kind of trying to figure it all out. So that's a really good side of it too. So if you like giant monsters, it's got a good giant monster story going on, and it's also a really good Black Panther story. And I think that for the writer's first time writing a comic book, she did a great job. I think she did a really good job with this.
Yeah. And what's also nice about it is that if you're in the US and you have Comixology Unlimited, you automatically get it with your Unlimited subscription. So it's like no extra charge to you to check it out.
Right. Yep. And the second issue is already put on there, so...
Alrighty, well, that brings an end to this week's episode. Do you want to kind of do the admin stuff and bring us out, or how do you I'm so sorry. I'm starting to get a little fried. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Yeah. If any of our listeners want to email the show, they can email at kaijuweekly@gmail.com. That email is available for anybody to send in suggestions for what you want us to talk about, things like that, and whatever you want to. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at CaptainTravis55. Because I'm on the Twitters.
Yeah, and if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jake the Nerdman. I also have an Instagram account where I post doodles sometimes and some short form comics I've written, just like one page stuff. There will be a kaiju comic on there by the time this releases. There's not currently, but there will be one on there. So that's something to look out for. But yeah, you can find us there. And like Travis was mentioning, feedback, suggestions, reviews. Anything you'd like, send it on into the email.
Yeah, and do we know what we're going to be doing next week? Do we want to tease what we're doing next week?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Let me open up the schedule. I think I know what it is, but I just want to make
sure. Yeah, that's me, too. I'm like, I'm not 100% sure on what we're doing next week.
So, next week, we'll be covering the 2016 movie, Colossal, starring Anne Hathaway. It looks like to be a pretty fun romp. Like there's a giant monster and she's somehow connected to it. So whatever she does, it does.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to watching that. I've heard really good things about
it. Yeah, I have, surprisingly, as much as a fan of giant monsters that I am, I haven't watched that movie yet. So I'm actually really interested to see what it's about. Cause I know the trailers all looked really good. So.
Great. So it'll be fresh for both of us.
Yeah.
We'll be introducing it to each other next
right,
week.
Right. Yeah. All right, so that's everything, and before we go, I just want to say...
I think you are doing so good listening to us, and if you could please like and subscribe for us so we can build an audience and reach more and more people.
I had to do the voice one last time!
And Microsoft Sam, here I come.
Au revoir.
Goodbye.